Heavy, spoon-billed wading birds flew west across the lines, white against the encroaching dark. In the thickets, the daytime chirruping insects gave up their pitches to the night beetles, the nocturnal crickets, the tick flies, creatures that spiraled and swam in the light of the stove fires and filled the long hot darkness with their percussion. Other cries rolled in the sweaty air, the whoops and gurgles of unseen climbers and grazers in the swamp. The distant artillery had fallen silent. Gaunt returned to the command shed just as the grill-shaded watch lights came on, casting their greenish glow downwards into the slush, bullseye covers damping their outflung light in any direction other than down. No sense in making a long-range target of the base. Furry, winged insects the size of chubby hands flew in at once to bounce persistently off the lit grills with a dull, intermittent thock, thock, thock. Gaunt took one last look around the base side, now distinguished only by the points of light, the cook fires, stoves, watch lights, and moving torches. He sighed and went inside. The command center was long and low, with a roof of galvanized corrugate and walls of double-ply flakboard. The floor was fresh-cut local wood, sawn into planks and treated with vile-smelling lacquer. Blast shutters on the windows stood half open, and the wire screens inside them were already thick with a fuzzy, quivering residue, the mangled bodies of moths and night bugs which had thrown themselves at the mesh. Gaunt's command equipment and his duffel bags of personal effects were set off the floor on blocks of wood. They'd been sat directly on the floor for the first 2 days until it was discovered that where damp didn't seep up, burrowing worms did. He draped his coat on a wire hanger and hung it from a nail on the overhead rafter, then pulled up a camp chair and sat down heavily. Before him, block mounted, sat a cogitator, a Vox uplink, and a flat-screen mimeograph. A tech priest had spent over an hour diligently intoning prayers of function as he made the sacred machines ready. They were still propped in their half-open wrought iron casings to protect against the damp, and thick power feeds snaked off from them and ran from clip supports on the rafters out of a socket shutter and off to the distant generator. Lights and light images shimmered and flickered on glass plates glossed by condensation. Setting dials throbbed a dull orange. The Vox link made a low-level serpent hiss as it rose and fell through frequencies. Gaunt leaned forward and idly surveyed the latest information and tactical data coming through from the orbital fleet and other units. A skein of coded runes crossed and blinked on the dark glass. Quiet as nightfall, Milo entered from the anteroom. He offered a pewter beaker to his commissar. Gaunt took it with a nod, delighting at the beaded coolness of the metal.
"The tech priest's got the cooling units working again just now,"
Milo muttered by way of explanation.
"For a few minutes. It's only water, but it's cold."
Gaunt nodded his appreciation and sipped. The water was metallic and sharp, but it was deliciously cool. There was a thump on the outside step, then a quiet knock at the door. Gaunt smiled. The thump had been deliberate, a reassuring advance warning from a man who made no sound if he did not wish to. "Come in, McCall," Gaunt said. McCall entered, his lined face a little quizzical, as if surprised at being recognized in advance.
"Patrol report, sir,"
he said, standing stiffly in the doorway. Gaunt gestured him to a seat. McCall's battle dress and cloak were drenched in wet mud. Everything, including his face, was splattered. Everything except his lasgun, miraculously clean.
"Let's have it." "Their positions are still far back," McCall began. "Beyond the offensive line coded Alpha Pink. A few forward patrols."
"Trouble?"
The powerful, wiry man grimaced noncommittally. "Nothing we couldn't handle."
"I've always admired your modesty," Gaunt said. "But I need to know."
McCall screwed up his mouth and nose. "We took 6 of them in the western swamps. No losses on our side."
Gaunt nodded approval. He liked McCall, the Tanith's finest scout. Even in a regiment of stealthers and covert warriors, McCall was exceptional. A woodsman back home on Lost Tanith, he had reconnaissance skills that had proved themselves time and again to the ghosts. A ghost amongst ghosts, and modest with it. He never bragged, and it was certain he had more to brag about than most. Gaunt
offered his beaker to the man. "Thank you, sir, no." McCall looked down at his hands. "It's cold," Gaunt assured him. "I can tell. But no, I'd rather go without something I could get used to." Gaunt shrugged and sipped again. "So they're not moving?" "Not yet. We sighted I'm not sure what it was, an old ruin of some kind." McCall rose and pointed to a position on the wall chart. "Around here, far as I can tell. Could be nothing, but I'd like to follow it through with a survey in the morning." "An enemy position?" "No, sir. Something that was already here."
"You're right. Deserves a look.
In the morning, then," Gaunt agreed. "If that'll be all, sir."
"Dismissed, McCall."
"I'll never get the measure off him,"
Gaunt said to Milo after McCall had left.
"Quietest man I've ever known."
"That's what he does, isn't it, sir?" Milo said.
"What?"
"Quiet."
Part 3. Sound and Fury.
All around there was a hushing sound, as if the whole world wanted to silence him. McCall bellied in low amid the forest of ferns, trying to pick through the oceanic rushing sound they made as the wind stirred them. The fern growth in that part of Ramillies 268-43, flourishing on the thin ashy soils of the long cold volcanic slopes, was feathery and fibrous, mottled stalks rough as cane rising 3 man-heights into swaying multi-part fronds as white as water ice. They reminded him of the Nullwood forests back home, when there was still a back home. The Nullwoods in winter, when he'd gone out logging and hunting. Frost had crusted the evergreen needles on the sighing trees then, until they had tinkled like wind chimes. Here, now, there was only the sigh, the motion of the dry ferns, and the clogging dust that got into every pore and rasped the soft tissue at the back of the throat. The sunlight was bright and harsh, stabbing down through the pale, spare air out of a sky translucent blue. It made a striated web out of the ground cover under the ferns, stark sun splashes and jagged shadows of blackness. He crept forward 20 meters into a break of skeleton brush. His lower legs were already double-wrapped with chain-cloth to protect against the shredding thorns. He had his lasgun held to his chest on a tightly cinched strap to keep it clear of the dust, but every 10 minutes or so he checked its moving parts and cleared the dust, fern fibers, twig shreds, and burrs that accumulated constantly. Several cracks made him turn and freeze, sliding his gun into a firing grip between smooth, dry palms. Something was moving through the thicket to his left, cracking the occasional spent thorn underfoot. To be fair, they were moving with extreme and trained stealth, but still their progress sounded like a careless march to McCall's acute hearing. McCall drew his knife, its long silver blade deliberately dulled with ash. He backed into a thorn stalk and molded his body to the kinking plant. 2 steps. 1. He swung out, only pulling back his blade at the last moment. Trooper Dewar cried out and fell backwards, splintering dry stalks as he dropped. McCall was on top of him in a second, pinning his arms and pushing the blade against his neck.
"Sacred Feth, you could have killed me!"
Dewar barked agitatedly.
"Yes, I could," said McCall, a whisper.
He relaxed his grip, rolled off, and let the man rise.
"So could anything else out here, noise you are making."
"Aye,"
Dewar dropped his voice suddenly.
"Are we alone?"
McCall didn't answer. Chances were, if anything else was out here, it would have heard Dewar's fall too.
"I didn't mean anything,"
Dewar began hoarsely, wincing as he plucked out the thorns he had fallen on. McCall was scanning around, his gun ready.
"What the feth did they teach you during basic?" he whispered. "You're meant to be a scout."
Dewar didn't reply. All the scouts knew McCall's exacting standards and knew just as well how they all failed to meet them. Dewar felt angry, in fact. During basic training, before that as a hunter in the southern gameland of Tanith Attica, he'd been reckoned as a good tracker. That was why they had selected him for the scout unit when the regiment mustered for Feth's sake. And this old bastard made him feel like a fool, a clumsy fool. Wordlessly, ignoring the stare he knew Dewar was boring into the back of his head, McCall signaled an advance, heading down the slope into the fern-choked vale.
The Tanith had arrived on Ramillies 2 weeks before, just in time to miss the main action. The Adeptus Astartes had cleaned out and secured the 4 enemy strongholds, banishing chaos from the world. The ghosts had assembled on the low plains near one burning fortress, seeing space marines, threatening bulks, in the smoky distance, like the giants of myth, piling the ragged corpses of slain cultists onto pyres. The air had been thick with filthy char. It seemed some small components of the enemy had fled the defeat, making into the fern forests in the north, too small and insignificant for the glorious space marines to waste time upon. The Commissar was charged with a search-and-destroy detail. The ghosts had advanced into the low hills and the dense forestation to smoke out the last of the foe. There were a few early successes. Enclaves of cultists, some well-armed, dug into bolt holes and lodges, making a last stand. Then, after a week, as they reached the colder, higher plateau and the real thickness of the fern cover, a working pattern developed. McCall would plan recon sweeps each day, deploying a couple of dozen scouts in a wide fan into the thickets. They would quarter each area and report back, signalling in the main ghost forces if contact was made. Perhaps they had become lazy, complacent. Major Rawn averred that they had silenced the last of the enemy and were now wasting their time and patience, cutting deeper and deeper into the lonely territories of the hinterland. The Commissar himself seemed devoted to discharging the task properly, but even he had doubled the reach and range of the scout sweeps. Another few days and they would quit, he had told McCall. This day, this high, cold, windy day, with the ever-present whisper of the ferns, the scouts had gone deeper and wider into the hills. There had been no contact with anything for 2 whole sweeps. McCall sensed that the less dedicated troopers like Dewar were getting slack with the routine. But he himself had seen things that kept him sharp and made him determined to press on. Things he had reported to Gaunt to convince him to work the forests a little longer. Broken paths in the vegetation, trampled areas, torn, apparently random trails in the underbrush. There was something still out here. They crossed the valley floor and came up the shaded side, where the ferns listed restlessly, like shadow fans. Every dozen or so steps, Dewar's feet cracked a thorn or a seed case or chinked a rock, no matter how delicately he walked. He cursed every sound. He was determined to prove his ability to McCall, and he had no clue how McCall moved so silently, like he was floating. The ferns hissed in the wind. McCall stopped to check his compact chart and referred his eyes to sun and compass. Within a quarter of an hour, their circuit should bring them into contact with Rafael and Wade, on a mirror sweep towards them. McCall suddenly held up a hand, and Dewar stopped sharp. The scout sergeant fanned his fingers twice to indicate Dewar should cover, and the other slid in low beside a thick fern stem, knelt, and raised his lasgun. There was dust on the exchanger, and he wiped it off. Dust in his eyes, too, and he wiped them. He braced and then took aim, rolling it left and right as McCall advanced. McCall dropped down another few meters and found another torn trail in the fern. As wide as 3 men walking abreast, ferns uprooted or snapped and trampled. McCall gingerly touched one sappy, broken twist of stalk. It was as thick as his thigh, and the bark was tough as iron. He could not have severed it this clean, even with a wood axe. He checked the ground. Trample marks, deep and wide, like giant footsteps. The trail snaked away both ahead and behind as far as he could see, uneven, weaving. McCall raised 3 fingers and circled them. Dewar advanced to join him. The younger man looked at the trail, questions in his mouth, but the look in McCall's eyes told him not to ask them, not to say anything. There was no sound at all except the hissing of the fronds. Dewar knelt and looked at the trail for himself. Something. Someone, big, moving blindly. His fingers touched something buried in the ashy soil, and he plucked it out. A chunk of blackened metal, part of the rim of something, large as a cupped hand. He held it out to McCall. The sergeant took it with genuine interest, studied it, and tucked it into his thigh pouch. He nodded a firm acknowledgement to Dewar for his sharp eyes. Dewar felt greater pride in that fleeting moment than he had ever done in his life before. Or would again. They moved on, down the trail line, following the bent forward fronds which indicated the direction of motion. After 60 meters, the trail veered uphill. McCall stopped and wiped his weapon again. A scream cut the air, as bright and sharp as a Tanith blade. They both started. It shut off abruptly, but while it lasted, it had been unmistakably human. McCall was moving in an instant, following the source of the sound. Dewar went after him, trying to keep his hurried steps silent. They moved off the trail into the thickets. Ahead, the foliage changed. Under the crest of the slope, thicker, spined cacti grew in clusters. Fibrous, gourd-like growths, lined with long needles, were arrayed down each seam of the plant sac. There were hundreds of the plants, some knee-high, some higher and fatter than a man, a forest of needle-studded bulbs. Another, weaker scream came, as from a man waking from a nightmare and abruptly dying away as he realized it was but a dream. And another sound, close on the heels of the scream. A hollow, plosive spitting sound, like someone retching fruit pits from his throat. They found Raffle crumpled amid the gourd bulbs. A trail of blood, bright spatters on the ashy ground, showed where he had dropped and how he had crawled. Over a dozen needles, some more than a foot long, impaled him. One went through his eye into his brain. Dewar, in horror, was about to speak, but McCall whirled and clamped his hand over the younger man's mouth. McCall pointed to the nearest of the large cactus growths, indicating where a line of spines were absent, leaving only a line of sap-drooling orifices.
"I say again, Trooper Raffle, what is your position?" the voice crackled out of the corpse's intercom.
McCall drove himself into Dewar, knocking him aside, away from Raffle, as the three bulbs nearest the body shuddered and spat spines. A salvo of those hollow, spitting coughs again. Needles stabbed into Raffle's corpse like arrows and bounced off the ground around them. One went through Dewar's shin. He wanted to scream, but managed to master it. The pain was sharp, then dull. His leg went cold. McCall rolled off him. Dewar pointed feebly at his leg, but the sergeant seemed to ignore it. He made a quick adjustment to the intercom at his collar and then reached down to Dewar's, switching it off. Only then did he turn to the wound. He took out his knife and cut the cloth away from Dewar's shin, slicing the straps holding the chain cloth bandages in place. The needle had passed right through the chain, directly through the eye of some links and severing others. McCall turned the knife round and forced the hilt into Dewar's mouth. Instinctively, Dewar bit down, and McCall yanked the needle free. There was very little blood. That was bad. The blood was clotting and turning yellow fast, and the sticky residue on the spine suggested venom. But the needle had only punctured flesh, which was good. The force of it could have shattered the shin bone. Dewar bit hard on the hilt a while longer. As the pain ebbed, he slackened his mouth, and the knife slid out down his cheek onto the ground. McCall rose. He would get Raffle's field dressings and bind the wound. Raffle would need them now. He turned. His foot cracked a thorn on the ground. A moment of carelessness, triggered by his concern for Dewar. A bulb shuddered at the crack and spat a needle. It passed through the stock of McCall's lasgun, and the point stopped an inch from his belly. He unfroze and breathed, then pulled it out. McCall crossed to Raffle and freed his field dressing pouch, pinned to his waist by another needle through the strap. He returned to Dewar and bound the wound. Dewar's head began to spin. It was an easy, fluid feeling, like his cares were ebbing away. There was a gnawing feeling in his leg and hip, but it was somehow pleasant. McCall saw the vacant glaze coming over Dewar's eyes. Unceremoniously, he took another length of gauze dressing and jammed it into Dewar's mouth, taping the gag tightly in place. A delirious man may not realize the sound he is making. He was about to lift Dewar onto his shoulder when another sound came, a ripping and crashing, distant at first, accompanied by the relentless retching spit of the bulbs as the tearing sound set them off. Something was coming, something drawn by Raffle's last scream. something gigantic. As it burst into the clearing, all of the cacti around them spontaneously shed their needles in a blitz of venomous barbs. The fusillade rattled off the metal carapace and legs. McCall threw himself over Dewar, and they lay there, silent and still under the storm of darts. The Chaos Dreadnought came to a halt on its great hydraulic feet, sighing and hissing. There was a stench of heat and a throb of electromagnetic power that prickled the hairs on McCall's neck. It was 4 meters tall, wider than 3 men, blackened and scorched, as if it had walked through hell and back. All signs of paint or insignia had been burnt off, to bare metal in some places. A malign presence oozed from it, filling the atmosphere. Such a great machine was terrifying enough in itself, but the malevolent feeling of it. McCall felt his gorge rise and clamped his jaws. Dewar seemed unconscious. The dreadnought took a step forward, almost tentative and dainty, though the great steel hoof shook the earth as it fell and triggered another volley of spines. Its body rotated as if scanning, and it took another step, another plank, plank of rebounding spines. It was blind. McCall could see that at a glance. The wounds of the Adeptus Astartes were deep and fearful across its visor. Its optical units had been blown away in some great act. McCall knew the semicircle of burnt metal Dewar had found was from the recessed socket of one of its eyes. It had been blundering around the fern forests for days, hunting by sound alone. Another step, another hiss of pistons and a growl of motivator, another thump of footfall, and another rain of darts. It was only 3 meters from them now, still cranking its body around, listening. Dewar started and woke up. He saw the dreadnought, and his filmy, poisoned eyes made even greater nightmares out of the existing ones. He convulsed and screamed. Despite the gauze gag, the scream was fierce and high-pitched, strangulated and horrible through the choke. McCall knew he had an instant to react, even as Dewar stirred. He dived aside. The dreadnought swung and targeted the source of the scream as rapidly as the plants around them did. Poison needles spat into a body that had, mere microseconds before, been incinerated by a belching plasma gun. Needles rattled off the dreadnought again. McCall moved low, sliding round the bulk of the bulbs, trying to keep the listening death machine in sight. His heart was thumping. He cursed it for being so loud. Behind the next break of growth, he slid in low and checked his weapon. There were fern fronds caught in the trigger. He thought at once to pull them free and then stopped. It would make a sound. And what was the use? What good would a lasgun be against that? He moved again, his foot skittering a stone. Needles spat ineffectually. The dreadnought began to move, following the sound, walking through rains of needles that convulsed and flew at each footfall. McCall thought to run. It was blind. The plants were blind. If he could only stay silent, and that was his gift, he could slip away and take the information to Gaunt. But would they find it again? Out here, in such a wilderness, it could take weeks to relocate the dreadnought, the lives of many to neutralize it. If he could only... No. Madness. Suicide. Then he heard the voice. Distant. It was Wade, calling for Raffle. He was beyond the needle bulbs, searching, querying why Raffle had stopped transmitting. In moments, surely, he would be triggering needles. Or summoning the dreadnought. Already, the blind beast had turned and begun to stride through the thicket, crushing the spitting cacti into ochre mash. McCall had seconds to think. He would not lose another of his scout carder. Not like this. He took out a grenade, primed it, and threw it left. The crump took out a cluster of bulbs in a spray of fire and matted fibers, and caused a flurry of spines to shoot. McCall then headed directly for the blast site. He slid in with his back to one of the bulbs that had triggered at the sound of the explosion. Its needle apertures were spent. He could use it as cover safely now it was unarmed. The dreadnought was thumping his way, drawn by the sound of the grenade. Wade had fallen silent. McCall adjusted his gun and set it on the ground. Then he spoke. "Over here, you bastard!" It sounded impossibly loud, a final taunt to follow the grenade. Bulbs popped around him, but none had spines left on the sides facing him. The dreadnought crunched into the clearing. Its left foot clinked against something in the dust. It bent to retrieve it. McCall's lasgun. The dreadnought raised it in its bionic claws, holding the gun up to its already ruptured frontal armor as if to sniff or taste it. McCall started to run. By his estimation, there were 5 seconds before the lasgun magazine overloaded as he had set it. He threw himself flat as it went off. Hundreds of cacti loosed needles at the roar. Then silence. With Wade, silently, McCall re-entered the thicket. They found the dreadnought broken open in the blackened clearing. The overload had not killed it, but it had split its armor as the towering machine had strode forward. Poison darts had done the rest, puncturing and killing the now vulnerable once man inside. McCall could see where the maddened chaos beast machine had strode arrogantly on for a few heavy steps after the puny laser blast. Then it had toppled, poisoned, dead. They headed back onto the trail.
"You're a fethin' hero," Wade said finally.
"How's that?"
"A fethin' dreadnought, McCall. You killed a dreadnought."
McCall turned and faced Wade with a look that brooked no denial.
"Well, tell the commissar that the area is cleared. Understood? I don't want any stupid glory. Is that clear?"
Wade nodded and followed his sergeant.
"But you killed it," he ventured softly.
"No, I didn't. I listened and waited and was silent. And when I made the opening, Ramillies did the rest."